Good morning, fellow students, and welcome to another episode of Legacy Weapon, your guide to the Legacy format. I'm Jamie.
And I'm Drew.
We are here today to continue our studies in the format and to get a little bit more topical. We started off introducing you to what the format is, and today we're going to talk to you a little bit about how the format is, why the format is. We're getting philosophical up in here.
Yeah.
Up in here. So, first, the thing that brings us to this is there was recently a Grand Prix. Drew, what's a Grand Prix?
A Grand Prix is a big tournament.
Whoa, how big?
In this case, about 2,000 players.
That is slightly larger than my F&Ms.
Slightly.
Slightly?
Yeah.
Hey, you don't know me. You don't know my store.
I do know your store. I've been to your store.
Shut up. So, we recently had a Grand Prix that was a Legacy Grand Prix. This is notable because they usually have about, what, four a year Legacy Grand Prix?
Yeah.
And they are spread out. There's usually about two of them in America and then two somewhere else is how it's been, at least for the past few years, I think. This one was out in Seattle, Tacoma, which is two cities that are near each other. So nice that they named each one once and then slapped them together because they weren't good enough on their own.
I mean, you have 2,000 Legacy players. I mean, you need multiple cities to contain all of that, you know.
True. I may have
power.
Also just isolated every Seattle and Tacoma listener that we've had. I'm so sorry. I'm sure your city's lovely. Oops. I've never been to either one of them.
I hear good things, though.
I've lived in Winston-Salem and Raleigh-Durham. Dual cities, confused children. That's all I remember from being a kid.
Right.
So, moving on. How did the GP go? I was able to catch some of it, but not all of it, and it seemed really interesting from what I was able to watch.
Yeah, it's good to see lots of people playing Legacy, which is always fun.
The thing I loved the most was how wide open the field was. We talked recently about how there was the banning of Dig Through Time, and people were wondering whether that was going to open the field up, because prior to that banning, it was, what, 40% was split between two decks or so?
It wasn't quite that bad, but
the thing was, Grand Prix are two-day events. If you do well enough on day one, basically, if you have a chance of winning big, you get to come back for day two. If you've done poorly and you don't have a chance, you don't come back for day two. So the day two decks, they were looking at the decks which were represented there. There were 20 decks that had at least like 2% of the field each.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of decks.
And then there were like 20 more that were still there on day two. You could get to day two with, seemed like, just about anything.
Yeah.
Now, what were the big decks? And I do apologize, because some of our listeners aren't going to know all these decks. We know that some of you will. But we did want to kind of jump ahead, talk a little bit about what Legacy's like today, why people are playing, what people are playing, story time.
Right.
It's Legacy story time with Drew and Jamie.
Yeah, we'll get into much, much greater depth later about what these decks really are and what they do. But, you know, at least get the names out there so you've heard about them and, you know, to have a sense of what's a control deck, what's an aggro deck, and familiarize yourselves with the terms.
So the number one deck was still Miracles, which is the control deck. It is pretty much the only control deck. It'll be one of our first few deck techs that we do, I imagine, just
probably. It's probably the best deck in Legacy right now, and it has been for a while.
It's been in the top five for years.
A long time, right.
Since before I started, at least.
Right.
So it is very good. It is pretty much the only pure control deck. It stops you from doing things. It plays counter spells. It digs through its library, and it does lots of things very slowly. Now, that said, though, it was not dominant. It wasn't, you know, half the field. It wasn't half the winning decks or anything.
It didn't win the tournament.
It didn't win the tournament. What I love was just all the random other brews that were in the tournament.
Yeah.
Some of the things that are kind of tier 1.5, tier 2-ish that are always around, those were around.
Yep.
Like Elves, like Maverick.
Reanimator.
The two that we've kind of talked about.
Yeah.
Reanimator. Lands. Lands maybe is tier 1, 1.5 right now, but it's still not always in the top.
Right.
Delver was all over the place.
Yep.
Delver, we've talked about Delver, Seekers of the Card, is hard to talk about as a deck because there's about four different decks that are all called Delver.
Yeah.
They're all called Delver because they all run Delver and because they all play out sort of similarly in the idea of get down an early threat and then disrupt your opponent. But there's a blue-red Delver and a blue-green-black Delver and a blue-red-green Delver and a blue-red-white Delver. And you'll notice a lot of those don't share any colors with each other.
Right. There's there is a huge variety of cards that see play in these Delver decks, and they're
sort of a pile of good stuff.
They really kind of are, yeah.
Delver.
Just low casting cost, good stuff. In pick some colors.
So it's hard to kind of talk about them. If you included them all together, that would be the number one deck by a small edge. At least on day two, it would have edged out Miracles by a little bit.
Yeah.
But each one was only, I think like one of them was sixth most popular, one was 10th, one was 15th, something like that.
Right.
And we wanted to say that now just because some people complain that if you lump them together, well, they're all very different. Some of them only have one color in common in the first place. But if you talk about it all separate, it sounds like none of them are very good.
Right, and you need to understand, you're going to see a lot of Delver of Secrets. The card is all over.
Yes. I actually was just listening to another podcast that was talking about Delver of Secrets. This one was MTG Focus Spikes. I was just listening. They were talking about the Grand Prix, and they were talking about Delver. They were talking about how they think that Delver is the reason why it's not just all combo. Because Delver gives you a reason to be on the ground with dudes, which then pulls a little bit further away from combo towards creatures, which then opens it up to allow full creature decks to exist. Interesting idea, because you and I had talked about how Force of Will does that, and maybe Delver does it too.
I mean, I think the Delver deck still wouldn't function without Force of Will. I mean, I think they would still lose to the combo decks if they didn't get to play Force of Will. But
say Delver didn't exist, the metagame really might shift to more combo versus stop combo.
I mean, you might be right that all the blue decks would then kind of be either Miracles or fast combo.
Neither of which really work out all that well for dudes on the ground.
Dudes on the ground. Green decks like yours and mine.
So those were some of the big players. The top eight, though, this is also what I love, just how wide open the field is. There were
six different archetypes in the top eight.
Six? Was that it?
Well, I mean, out of a possible eight. There are two shardless decks. Shardless is usually shardless Sultai, so blue, black, and green. It's a sort of mid-range deck. Then there are two Delver decks, and then everything else is unique.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, out of eight, you had six that were completely different.
Right.
Sorry, my math is just terrible today. If you go to Standard, there was on the same day a Standard tournament,
right,
which apparently went very well. It was run by Star City Games. They do good content, but I was listening again to the guys on MTG Focus. They're talking about how they turned it off and went over to the Legacy one in part because the top four in Standard were all the same archetype.
This sort of happens in Standard a little bit sometimes.
I've heard complaints about Legacy where nothing changes and you're just stuck with a deck, but
at least you have a choice of deck.
It's really that you can be stuck with a deck if you want to. If you like a deck, you can stick with it for a long time. You never have to be stuck with anything in Legacy.
Right.
With the, 40 different decks which all made day two.
Right.
As opposed to all four Abzan.
Right.
Abzan
which
mirrors.
Apparently the only thing that you could play and have any sort of success with in Standard.
Someday we need a Standard corner, because I've got one Standard deck that I think is fun, but email me about that one. We're not going to talk about that today.
No.
The winner. Who was the winner? Let's see if a drum roll will come through the microphone.
I'm hearing a drum roll. The winner, Lands, won the tournament.
Thank you. So Lands, what is Lands? 10,000 feet up view, but what is the Lands deck?
Lands, well, as the name would suggest, runs a really large number of lands, usually somewhere in the 35 to 40 range.
As opposed to the 15 range?
Yeah, right. I mean, there are decks that run single digits sometimes. They're just all full of, Dark Ritual and Lotus Petal, and those are all your mana sources.
Yeah.
Most decks are more around, 20, so this is sometimes twice as many lands.
This one had 35 lands.
Right, which is on the low end, I think, actually, for lands decks, but...
Well, that was in the main. They had more in the side.
Right, actually, right. The sideboard is more lands.
More lands. So the way that this works is it locks down your opponent. There's Wasteland that we talked about. There's lands that tap other lands.
Mm-hmm.
There's lands that kill all your opponent's creatures. There's lands that stop you from taking combat damage.
Right.
And so it's basically a control deck, I think.
It's a hard control deck, yeah.
Yeah. You just had me say that Miracles is the only good control deck.
That's true. Actually, Lands is... Yeah, I tend to forget about lands somehow.
It's like a tier 1.5 deck that's just it's
always under the radar. Yeah,
it is.
The thing about it is that since it's got so many lands, it's just hard to interact with. They don't play spells; they play these lands that do things, and it's really weird.
A lot of people write it off as either a good matchup or a bad matchup, and then just move on.
Yeah, and to some extent that may be true because it's a lot of decks just you can't really sideboard for this very well because it's hard to deal with your opponent's plan if they're playing this or you have stuff that they can't really stop and you beat them pretty easily.
Yeah, they've got basically three win conditions in the deck that I can see. One being a Dark Depths combo, mm-hmm. which that is a way to, by getting two specific lands in play, cheat into play a 20/20 flying indestructible.
Yep.
So that's one win condition, and they've got four of each of those. They can just keep pumping those out if they make the game go long enough.
Yep.
They've got a Molten Vortex in the side, which says discard a land, deal 2 damage. So turn your entire deck into shocks, and then Ancestral Recall and shocks if you got Life from the Loan. Right. Life from the Loan being take 3 lands from your graveyard and put them in your hand.
Right.
Pretty good if you can keep redoing that over and over again.
Which you can.
And Punishing Fire.
Punishing Fire, which is the world's slowest win condition.
Oh, yeah. Deals 2 damage to your target, creature, or player.
Right.
And you can get it back from your graveyard if your opponent gains life. Well, there's a land that makes your opponent gain 1 life.
Right.
So cast it for 2 damage. They gain 1 life. Cast it again.
Yeah, so all over right. and so over and over again. Yeah,
20 turns later, they'll die. But right. That's the thing. When you're doing these other stuff, you can...
Sometimes you have 20 turns, yeah.
Yeah. So the other things that were in the top, we want to talk about that a little more since it's the winner. And, you know, if you can catch that matchup, I mean, we joke about how lands is such a slow, almost like painful to watch. It's actually not painful to watch. It's actually really interesting to watch. It's just very long because it goes so slow.
Right.
The other ones, there were Delver. Grixis Delver is the Delver that made it there. There was Miracles. Jeskai Miracles. That's red, blue, white Miracles.
Yep.
Reanimator.
Yeah.
Which is another
That's
one
that's
a bit
that, of a surprise. That's probably the surprise of the top four for me.
Yeah, I don't think I've... Well, I mean, the big surprise is coming. My fun surprise is coming. But this is one that it's always there. Somebody is always playing it. But you don't see it in top eights very often.
Yeah,
and that's the great thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you can find a deck that other people think is a bad deck, and you can win or almost win a GP with it.
Right. I mean, all these decks do very powerful things. And if Reanimator, as you might guess, the goal is to put big creatures from your graveyard into play without paying their mana costs, and it's really powerful, but it's very susceptible to disruption if your opponent is playing Graveyard Hate. But if your opponents aren't playing Graveyard Hate because they think Reanimator is a bad deck and no one will be playing it, well, now Reanimator is a good deck and you can win a lot of games.
Exactly. Shardless Sultai was in the list.
Yep.
This one had two of. Shardless refers to Shardless Agent,
right,
which is a little bit complicated, but it's a 3-mana creature that when you cast it, you get to start digging through your library for free and cast the first card you hit that costs less than 3.
Yeah.
So then it's just got really good things at 0, 1, and 2 mana.
So you basically get a free spell attached to
a decent body
creature, yeah.
Including a card which... We won't go completely into the suspend mechanic, but cards that don't have a casting cost, they only have alternate ways to cast them, which are hard, usually.
Right.
Technically means they have a 0 casting cost. So
sometimes
this
turns into a Grizzly Bear stapled to an Ancestral Recall, and it's really, really good. This interaction is itself pretty much good enough to make this a tier 1 deck.
Then it's just full of other good stuff, all across the board. Discard, disruption, and then this is my favorite. This is my jam, because I know a guy who was running a deck not nearly as good as this, but based around the same card about 5-10 years ago. Alorin.
Yeah,
tell us about Alorin.
So Alorin is a 4-mana green enchantment, which, like we said, with 4-mana spells in Legacy, they mostly have to win you the game. This one can. It says any player can cast any creature card from your hand with a total casting cost 3 or less, and you can play it
for free
without paying its mana cost and as if it had flash.
So, this wasn't on the staples of the format? This sounds like it would be in every deck.
Right.
No.
No. That, it seems like, yeah, it's just really weird, right? Because it lets your opponent do this too, and I mean...
And they can do it with Flash too, so they can respond, and they can do stuff on your turn as soon as you cast it.
And by the time you've
played
your 4-mana spell, for the most part, you've already played your 3-mana spells and 2-mana spells, yeah. And so it's like, okay, I get to play all of my cheap spells, but only if I could pay an expensive spell. That doesn't seem super great, but...
So this combos amazingly well. For one thing, there's a creature that's 3-mana that will fetch you up another creature. Yeah. So that can get you whatever you need to start your combo.
Right.
Then there's a creature, which costs so little. And when it comes into play, you get to bounce a creature. So that lets you reuse that first one if you want to.
Right.
Also, you can pay one life to bounce it to your hand. Okay, so now if you want to, you can... pay one life to bounce any creature you want to your hand, since you can bounce something else and then bounce the one for one life. It gets complicated from there, but basically they just keep replaying the same creatures, the same two creatures over and over and over and over again.
Right.
Drawing a card each time, searching up another creature each time, dealing you two damage each time, depending on which creatures they are, until you just die.
Right.
It all happens at instant speed.
Yeah.
Which is just beautiful. Yeah. Just a beautiful thing. I was vaguely aware that people played this. I didn't know it was a real deck.
I mean, because it was around, but it was kind of like a tier 3 deck. I mean, it was just, you know, it was there, but the combo was very unreliable.
Expensive at 3 mana.
At 4 mana. Right. So I'm kind of surprised still that the deck is as good as it is, because it has to run a lot of creatures in order to make the combo go, and a couple of the combo pieces are not good on their own. They're not necessarily terrible, but they're not really good. And I mean, Lauren is useless except when you're winning the game. You end up in four colors in order to do this, and because you're in four colors, you can't play Force of Will. You don't have enough blue cards to back it up. So it seems like, well, you're trying basically to play a 4-mana spell. And then if you have another specific card in your hand, you can win the game now.
You know, we tell you can play whatever you want. I would not have advised anybody to bring this to a GP. I don't have faith in the
too
format.
Slow.
Yeah, exactly. And really, I mean, if you can go slow, I mean, you play Commander. Like, there's powerful stuff you can do if you can go slow.
Sure.
The fact that it's still fast enough to get there.
And Miracles also goes slow, but it's really good at stopping its opponents from doing things. Right.
This doesn't have any counterspells.
The Shardless decks are also kind of slow, but they also have counterspells, and they also have a lot of discard spells for disruption. So they can really slow you down. This doesn't really have very much of that, and actually it has a fair amount of discard, but
yeah, it's got six discard spells, but they're all one for ones.
Right. Right?
They're not like huge hitters.
Some of this. And I may be wrong. We'll see. Maybe Aluren has some staying power. I think there's an extent to which a deck like this comes up and people aren't sure. Like, I mean, if you haven't seen an Aluren deck in 5 years, because that was the last time Aluren was a good deck in Legacy, you know, if you haven't seen one in a while, you may not know how to beat it, and you may make mistakes against it. Where if you see Miracles, okay, you see Miracles all the time, you know how to play against Miracles, because it's almost 20% of the metagame sometimes.
True. If you just have no idea what the pile of cards across from you is, you might not know that Aluren's the card you need to counter.
Right. Exactly. Even. So, you know, if this starts putting up good results, well, that advantage will evaporate, and it may end up not having the staying power that some of the other decks do. But we'll see. It definitely does some powerful things. It runs some cards that are just good cards that go in other decks. So we'll see. I may be wrong.
Yeah. So that was the Grand Prix. I think it was a huge success. It got excellent viewership on mm-hmm. Twitch, which is where they actually used to, history lesson, they used to show Magic on TV like they do poker. It was on like ESPN4 or something.
The Ocho.
The Ocho. but okay that they aren't anymore. Viewership on the Ocho apparently was not quite good enough. What they do now is that they followed on Twitch, which a lot of people, if you ever want to watch people play Magic, Legacy or any other format, there's always somebody on Twitch, which is an app or a website to watch people streaming, and they stream them playing on Magic Online. They stream people playing in person, and they stream all the big tournaments. The Wizards of the Coast tournaments, the Grand Prix, the Star City Games events, they're always on Twitch. So it was very highly attended, excellent, healthy metagame, wide open field, some decks that were stronger. So if you really want to know what the strong decks are, there are decks to talk about, decks to beat.
Mm-hmm.
But if you show the lore in, you'll get to the top eight, apparently.
So I will say, Alurin isn't quite as out of the blue, maybe, as you might think. It had top eighted a couple of other smaller tournaments within the past few weeks.
Okay.
So, I mean,
Its
time had come. I mean, I think it had been floating around. So it's not like no one had played this in 4 years and then somebody just randomly top eights a GP with it. But it is like, really, no one had played it in 3 years. Two people top eighted some small tournaments. And then somebody top-8ed a GP with it. So
usually, if you find a deck that hasn't been seen in 3 or 4 years, there's probably a reason.
It's probably bad.
Well, a lot of the time it's that there was something new printed that now is a staple.
Oh, yeah.
That hoses it. Like, there are a lot of graveyard decks that were good, but were just a little bit slow. And a slow graveyard deck cannot beat Deathrite Shaman.
Yeah, basically.
So the slow graveyard decks are kind of unplayable now, just because
Deathrite Shaman is so good, it's in all the decks.
And he's in main boards. That's the thing.
Right, he's a four of in a lot of main boards.
Right, you have a lot of decks that are going to lose to Graveyard Hate or Artifact Hate or something. But your idea is that you're so good, you're going to win game one against almost anybody.
And you have at least a fighting chance of stealing one of the other two, even after some horrible, horrible sideboard card comes in against you.
Right, but if you have to hope that they don't draw their four of card all three games. Yeah,
right. After sideboarding. Yeah, like that's no. Deathrite Shaman. We'll talk about Deathrite Shaman in our next Staples episode.
Oh,
but
yeah,
talked about him. But basically, he's a graveyard hate card who happens to be. He's probably actually. Apologies to Delver of Secrets. Deathrite Shaman is probably the best creature ever printed in the history of Magic. I'm gonna put that out there.
I'm not sure I agree with you, but I think I'll say the best one drop. I think I'll just say that. And there are a few two drops that are in contention.
There are some. All right, that's fair. I still think I have Deathrite Shaman number one.
Emrakul, 15 mana.
I mean,
that's playable.
I almost think of Emrakul as not really a creature, just because no one ever actually casts that spell.
That was the Grand Prix. Now, we did want to talk about, as we're talking about tournaments, there was a recent announcement, which I'm sure some of you heard, from Star City Games. Star City Games is an online Magic card store, and they run tournaments across the country. They have their own series that kind of parallels the Wizards of the Coast official tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
And you can compete in both, and a lot of people do. They have been one of the big forces to popularize Legacy over the past, 5 years or so? Just really common events. When Wizards of the Coast, as we said, Wizards of the Coast only throws about 4 large Legacy events a year worldwide.
And they're huge, but there are 4 of them.
And, you can play Legacy at your FNM, but Wizards of the Coast nationally doesn't really push it at all.
Right.
Star City Games was pushing it. They recently, last week, I think, came out with an announcement basically that they're going to push it less.
Last week, as of this recording, which is probably going to be two weeks ago by the time you hear this.
Yeah, this is as topical as we get, Drew. We're not a current events podcast. Come on. So they used to have their invitationals, their kind of semi pro tour sort of things. One of those every year would be Legacy. They're not doing that as a quote-unquote pro tour level event. They are having worse prizes at kind of all of their events, but it hurts the Legacy folks more since we really don't care about getting standard packs as prizes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also cutting back on their West Coast events. They're located here locally to me in Virginia, so they're staying a little closer to home on more of their tournaments. This got people really upset, because they saw it as that the reason Legacy is so popular is Star City, and Star City has abandoned Legacy. It's the end of the world. When I think that's a little bit of a sky is falling Chicken Little attitude.
So why is this guy not falling?
First of all, there have already been wonderful announcements by other retailers that they are upping their Legacy game in particular. like within 3 days of the Star City Games announcements, there were at least three other stores, smaller than Star City Games, but three stores of significant emphasis that are throwing their own legacy events or having $5,000 prize events of their own. So other people are already stepping into the gap. So that's one thing. Second, it's just the outpouring of support behind it. As soon as this announcement was made, and again, this is not Wizards of the Coast. This is not them saying anything different about the format. This is one store saying, we're going to do a little bit less.
Right.
And so many people came out of the woodwork online and in person at these events asking Wizards, asking Star City, asking each other over what was wrong, what was happening, should they do something. People really care about this. So that is why the sky is not falling. And kudos to Card Kingdom and kudos to the other stores that are stepping up. South Florida Magic is one that I know has stepped up in Florida, you might guess. Somebody else is
Southern Florida.
Yeah. Even. Somebody else is stepping up in the New Jersey area, which there's huge communities out there. One of the other complaints some people get, and some of our listeners might have this, is that they don't think there's any legacy near where they live. And I am sure that for every format, there are some areas of the country where there aren't players that play that. And I agree. There are probably more areas that don't have a vibrant legacy scene. And that's part of what we're here for, is to help bring more people in. So show you how you can do it easily, how you can have fun, how you can start a scene, how you can join a scene. You know, if you live in the middle of Wyoming, see, we isolated our Seattle listeners. Now we're going to isolate our Wyoming listeners.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, we're not going to have any states left.
It's okay. There's still time.
if you live in literally the middle of the Gobi Desert, there's probably not many standard or draft players near you. If you live on the West Coast or the East Coast, you can probably find a legacy game. Yeah. If you live in our towns, you can find a legacy game twice a week, at least. So, you know, if you say that you have no legacy in your hometown, contact us. Contact your local game store. I have other people who have started up local scenes in their areas to get you in touch with. It is worth starting. It is worth getting into, and all it takes is two people wanting it. It attracts other people. So just to kind of round it out, we did talk about those other stores, which are great stores. And like I said, do support the stores mostly by attendance more than anything else. But support the stores that support the formats that you love. We are sponsored by the store that supports us and who loves what we're doing. We are hosted on Gathering Magic, as you know, and we are supported by CoolStuffInc.com. Continues to be a great website that we shop at. The sale today was Cryptic Command, I believe.
It's a good card.
Good card. Already not on sale anymore by the time you're listening to this. You missed it. It's gone like that. But I also have card sleeves.
Topical podcast.
Also, they had card sleeves, which are the ones I'm looking for, so that's kind of perfect. And Commander products all slashed from prices. So that's really good stuff that they've got over there for all your cards, sealed and unsealed. We also have a special sponsor just for this episode, and this is a venue, actually, that contacted us. This is a show being shown over at the Ancient Amphitheater. Chains of Mephistopheles is the rising star in the goth musical world, and they want you to know about their real cute shindig they're going to have over at the amphitheater. They're going to be playing all the greatest hits. Urza's Rage, Bolduvian Rage, Barrage of Expendables. Their lead singer is right off of his tour being an elvish impersonator. And they also got their posters done up by the Artisan of Kozlek, which that's kind of just a big get right there. Be sure to go down and check out Chains of Mephistopheles and their opening acts, Elvish House Party, Abandon Hope, and Squeeze Toy. Tickets on sale now. Moving on.
All right. Moving on.
The last thing we want to talk about was actually just kind of what brought us into Legacy. We talked about this a little bit in episode one. We just wanted to tell you just more stories. We realized to a certain extent, you know, we are about kind of how to do well. We are more about the analytical stuff. Mm-hmm. But I read something about, you know, don't show me deck lists, tell me stories. Like, that's how to get somebody interested in the format. And we want you to want to be interested.
Yeah.
So
if you're not sold already, then consider this, I guess, a sales pitch.
Yeah. Though if you're still listening after episode four and you're not interested,
You must have a very boring life.
Oh, well, impulse control. You're like, oh, I got to download the next one because I can't stop now.
I really hate these guys, but maybe it'll get better.
So my first real deck that I built way, way back in the day, that was trying to really win in a kind of way that you'd think of. You know, you throw decks together. My first decks were every card I owned, and then, oh no, I'm going to put all the green cards I own together. Ha ha! I figured
maybe this won't be five colors.
I figured out the secret tech. It's going to be just green. Much better than now. The first one I did was a sapperling fungus tribal deck based around Gaia's Cradle, a card that makes lots and lots of mana. So it was basically a four-card combo to exponentially slowly grow how many creatures you had until you could kill them with 1/1s. This was my baby. And it slowly grew and slowly changed until it finally turned into a commander deck.
Right.
And then I realized that I had three Gaia's Cradles. And that's pretty much a legacy deck right there, if you have three Gaia's Cradles. And I tried it. I tried it on proxy first just to see if I liked it, because I didn't know anything about Legacy at all. Drew had told me, maybe you want to do Legacy, ha ha ha. And then I found out that this is possibly the most me deck of any deck. It's got grindy. It's got combo. It can win out of nowhere sometimes. It is a lot of math. It makes lots and lots and lots of mana. It's got lots of little creatures. It attacks. It doesn't have a single island in the whole thing.
That may be the most important thing right there.
Hey, I made a mono blue commander deck and I played it once. It was terrible.
And then you shredded it
promptly. I tried though. So, that's kind of how I got in. And that's the thing. I hope everybody can find a deck that they love that much. I've got other decks that I'm actually really excited about that I'm building in Legacy. And, you know, I'll talk about those after I have them together and I'm testing them out and everything. But that's part of what I love about the format, is that deck that attacks with a single 40-40 trample on turn three. I can keep playing that forever. This deck, we talk about how sometimes decks won't have been seen for 5 years because they're not good anymore. It happens. I don't foresee this deck ever not being playable. I don't ever see it not being at least pretty good. Getting so good with one, almost get an emotional investment. Like, I almost feel like this is the culmination of my Magic experience, actually, is this deck in particular, where it is competitive, it is spiky, it's creative, it's a little bit budget to work within what I can do, but almost the ideal list. It's really just perfect. And, when you can tutor up a creature that nobody knew existed, Rurik Thar, nobody expects Rurik Thar. Well, they should now. And if you listen to our Elves podcast, when we do that, you'll expect it too.
You too will expect it.
But the look on people's faces sometimes when they see, oh, I didn't know you had that in your deck, is priceless.
Oopsies.
So yes. How about you? Story time with Drew.
I don't have a maybe quite as beautiful a story as that. My first deck that I built that actually was supposed to, that I was trying to win with was actually, I think it was mono blue. It ran a number of cards that actually you can't play in Legacy because they're actually on the banned list. I think I had both Tinker and Windfall in that thing.
Oh, you played me this deck. I remember this one. This is the one I stopped playing against you with.
Yeah.
I banned you from using it. Though you did pair that with Thieving Magpie, so...
Right. It was a wonderful hodgepodge of incredibly terrible cards and then banned in Legacy because they're so good cards. So how I got into Legacy was Jamie was talking about maybe getting rid of one of his Gaia's Cradles, and I said, jokingly, or you could just get a fourth one, and then you could probably build Elves. And
a long pause laughed. Happened on the phone call at that point.
I laughed, and Jamie didn't laugh. the gears were turning, and then, Jamie bought a cradle, and the rest was history.
Yeah, and we actually didn't even live near each other at the time, though.
No, but as it happened, the rest of the playgroup that I have that was local, they happened, well, one of them actually had a Legacy deck and did play, and the other one was starting to get into it. Then, my three best friends who play Magic are all getting into Legacy at the same time, I guess that means I have to play Legacy. So I was kind of dragged to the format kicking and screaming, and I just wanted to see if I could build basically the cheapest thing that would be a reasonable Legacy deck. And I did. It is called Soldiers. It is still a pretty reasonable Legacy budget deck, I think. It's maybe not quite as good as it was at the time because of metagame reasons.
It's tier two, 2.5 maybe.
It's
two,
totally
probably.
Solid. I have gone back to playing it periodically sometimes now, and it
holds up.
It holds up. So I built this thing just kind of expecting, you know, all right, whatever, I'll just throw this together so that I have something to play. And I started winning games, like more than half of my games against my friends who were building these legit tier one Legacy decks. And that was a rush. It was awesome. So I started tricking it out. It wanted a Caracas. I hadn't put a Caracas in there because I was like, is it really necessary? I bought a Caracas. It got a little better. Then they banned the card that this was really feasting on.
Yeah, they didn't ban something in your deck, but they banned the card that your deck was so well positioned against.
Right. So, because, yeah, this has a bunch of cards that just hate on people who want to play a lot of one drops, basically. It is so good against, if your opponents are going to play nothing but one drops, they cannot beat this deck, basically. Yeah. Unless it has a bad draw. It's a really inconsistent deck. It can lock people out on turn one. It can kill people. It can combo kill people on turn three, or it can just kind of do nothing. But
those are the games I liked when you did nothing against me.
Right, there were some of those.
No.
So all right, so they banned the card, so it wasn't good anymore. It's still, again, it wasn't as good anymore.
It was maybe tier one for a while there.
It might have been tier one for a while. It still beats the crap out of Delver decks, but those just aren't like 50% of the metagame anymore. So I sort of tweaked it. I added some colors to make it a little more versatile. The core of the deck was always hatred. It just hating out your opponents.
So you hated being in the format, then you hated your friends, and then you realized you just loved hating.
Right, basically. It does harken back to my original horrible blue deck that I played, which was a control deck, and the idea was I wanted to be playing control, and I didn't want to shell out all the money, though, to build a Miracles deck. So I found something where I could play control not in blue. And so now I play it, and this is what this does, is it control without counterspells. You try to delay your opponents.
Yeah, creatures and lands that have alternate effects that also just slow down and hamper your opponent. Almost like a prison deck in a certain extent of just locking in what your opponent's able to play around.
Right. And I love the deck that I have now, is not as ridiculous as the Soldiers deck. It's called Maverick.
It's not as silly, but it's maybe more ridiculous as far as just being strong.
It's maybe more ridiculous. It's probably more powerful, yeah. At least it's certainly more consistently powerful. Soldiers' best draws are just about unbeatable, but Soldiers' worst draws are very common and almost literally do nothing. Maverick is a much more like an actual Legacy deck. It just actually plays Magic all of the time.
I actually remember some of those early conversations where you and I were worried because we had heard about Legacy being turn one format, and so you were really,
right,
really nervous about that. And then you got in and found that it was actually... have I used the fencing analogy yet?
I don't think so.
I saw a kind of as a joke, but it was really great, I thought. It was a description, a photo description of each of the different formats, and it showed Limited... Limited was like two middle schoolers just punching each other on a playground. And then Standard was like a bar brawl. And then Modern was like MMA fighting.
Yeah.
Legacy was a fencing match.
Okay.
And then Vintage was a pistol duel. So, but Legacy just has so much finesse and subtlety to it. The idea of when to fetch a basic versus a not, versus when to play the best card versus the second best card to try to draw out their counterspell. The idea that you have to pay attention on turn zero, not because they're going to win turn one, but because they might do something that you need to interact with on turn one.
Right. And there's just the existence of all the spells that don't cost any mana means that you have to be, even when your opponent is tapped out, you can't assume that they won't do anything. There's so much more to keep track of.
It's just so deep, so intricate. As much as Magic is a game that you can never solve, Legacy, to a certain extent, kind of just is Magic. to me at least. Yeah. It's magic for people who aren't millionaires, but it's kind of just everything. You can be surprised by your opponent. You can see a card you've never seen before, which outside of a pre-release, you don't get that in Standard.
Right. And by the time I go to a pre-release, I've looked at every card in the spoiler. Right. So that actually doesn't happen to me at pre-releases anymore, even. It does happen to me in Legacy sometimes.
And let me just say that if anyone ever plays the card Chains of Mephistopheles against you, call a judge immediately just to help you figure out what it does. Trust us.
Oh, man. Yeah. Do not try to read the text on the card because you just hurt yourself.
Plus, half of them are in Italian anyway.
Yeah, it's true, actually. Yeah.
A lot were printed of that set in foreign languages. So,
yeah.
So all we had to do is, for both of us, we kind of got one toe in, and the water was fine.
And just kind of got sucked in, yeah.
And we'll just say, we don't have podcasts on any other formats.
Yet.
Prismatic Pie with Jamie and Drew.
It probably is not a podcast on Prismatic. I think we could probably corner the market on that one.
I don't know if there's anybody alive who knows what that format is. And we have now isolated both of the Prismatic players.
I don't even know what Prismatic is. I couldn't actually tell you the rules.
All I know is the Prismatic
is five colors.
All I know is that it is one of the 6 or 12 formats that Gatherer lists legality on. So if you pull up a card, it'll tell you, is this card banned or legal in Prismatic? Which just means that podcast is ripe for the pickings, everybody. Yeah,
definitely. It's the next big thing.
We give that to the listeners. Prismatic Pie. You can use that episode.
Right. We renounce all claims to that that shining piece of intellectual property there.
What do you want to have closing thoughts? Like a banned card of the day?
Oh, banned card of the day. Banned card of the day. Well, let's have the banned card of the day be Tinker in honor of my old broken, not actually very good, but occasionally broken blue deck. Tinker is a sorcery printed in Urza Block, which is home of pretty much all of the most broken things ever since Alpha. It's a sorcery for a blue and two colorless. It says, as an additional cost to playing Tinker, you sacrifice an artifact, and you search your library for any artifact card and put it on the battlefield.
This probably seemed fair at the time when the biggest artifacts in Standard were, there probably was a huge one, but when they designed it, they were probably thinking of like a 5-mana artifact, a 6-mana artifact.
Right.
It's a little different when you get like an 11-mana artifact.
Right. So there's an artifact creature that basically can kill you in one hit if it attacks.
And it has trample, and it has indestructible.
And it's indestructible. And it costs 12, but you don't care because you play Tinker. This has been banned since before that was printed, I think. But this is something that's a staple in a lot of vintage decks because you can do that and it just wins the game right away. I was finding like Masticore or something.
Yeah, I think that might be what you were getting.
Which is a pretty good card.
It's one of those cards which I remember. I actually remember when it was like the Chase Rare and everybody wanted it because it was tearing up Standard and Extended.
Right.
And it was broken. And I picked one up for 50 cents the other day.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why don't chase Standard, kids. Stay off the smack.
Yeah. Stay off the smack. Yeah. Play Legacy instead.
Yeah. So Tinker. Tinker is very cool. They have, unlike, you know how we talked about how they keep trying to reprint Black But Lotus and they keep making it just still broken? I think that they've tried to redo Tinker, and I think that they've done some that are powerful, but I think it's all been fair enough. Nothing else is really, that I can think of, has had to be banned. They've got some which are kind of more expensive or that limit that you can only get small artifacts or something.
And there are a lot of that put it into your hand, which is fine.
Right. Then you
still have to cast the point when you sacrifice a 0-mana artifact and pay 3 mana to get an 11-mana spell or a 12-mana spell. That's broken. That's Tinker. Fond memories. Good times.
Well, that is going to be it for our episode today. And how can they reach you?
You can email me at mtgdrewwalton@gmail.com.
I am jamie7keller@gmail.com and on Twitter. The show is legacyweaponpodcast@gmail.com. You can hit us up there and be sure to check us and everybody else out on Gathering Magic. Oh, I did forget to say that actually the coverage on the Wizards of the Coast mother site was done by Adam Stibbs, the big head honcho over at Gathering Magic. So that was fun to see him do such a good job doing all the write-ups.
Our editor, yeah, he's a good guy.
So until next time, though, just remember, preparation is the best legacy weapon. Thanks.
toolbox. I love toolbox decks. And so there's...
I actually like to call them Adam West decks, because you just always have the right thing in your tool belt.
Right. Yes. I've got my shark repellent right here. And
and your threats are very resilient, because sometimes you just can't get rid of a bomb.